From the National Endowment for the Arts, this is Artworks. I'm Josephine Reed.
This band has always done what they believed in and nothing less. That's funny, Joe, because, you know, there's so much of it we do is tradition, and that is all history, and that's all about looking where we've been, but just keeping moving forward. The purest definition of tradition is to do something that maintains the tradition, but moving forward, making something new. And that's what we've done.
That is Luis Perez, the guitarist, percussionist, jarana player, songwriter, and co-founder of the 2021 National Heritage Awardee, Los Lobos. And this is the first podcast in our new series, Artful Lives. When Dr. Maria Rosario Jackson became chair of the Arts Endowment, she shared her foundational belief that the agencies center on the concept of artful lives as critical for just and equitable communities. And she imparted a set of principles to help illuminate what that means and what it requires. Like, creativity is a community asset, and that communities should tell their own stories on their own terms. Certainly, Luis Perez and his bandmates in Los Lobos have done just that, telling the stories of their Chicano communities through the distillation of traditional Mexican songs, which makes revisiting my 2021 interview with Luis Perez a great way to kick off the Artful Lives series. Los Lobos is a groundbreaking band from East Los Angeles who discovered or rediscovered the musicality of the traditional Mexican songs from their childhoods and added a rock and roll sensibility to it. But Los Lobos never stands still. They move from electric instruments to acoustic, from English to Spanish, traditional music to rock, with forays into R&B, Zydeco, Tex-Mex, and soul, with ease and passion. They've been together, the same core four, for 50 years. Steve Berlin, the new kid, came to the band in 1984. They had been together for 15 years when they performed some of the music for the film about Ritchie Valens, and their recording of La Bamba became the number one song throughout the country. But Los Lobos, being Los Lobos, just kept on making music their own way. Extraordinary, unexpected music, always coming back to their Chicano roots and East LA. And their commitment to bring traditional music to the world and their continuing celebration of Chicano music and culture is a big reason the band was named a 2021 National Heritage Fellow. I spoke with band member Luis Perez in 2021, and since he tells such vivid stories with his songwriting, I asked him to tell me the story of Los Lobos.
We all grew up in the barrios of East Los Angeles. So we all met up at James A. Garfield High School, which is really famous for the movie Santa Deliver. Oh, how could I put it? We were friends before we ever became musicians together, but we were musicians. I had a band with David. Caesar had a band, like a soul band, and Conrad had one of these bands that, like a three-piece power trio that wanted to be louder than everybody else. And we were just friends in high school. Once we graduated, we still hung out as friends together, but we didn't play music together. We had our own bands. You know, like the story goes, we were hanging around together, and they say, if you hang around at a barbershop long enough, you'll eventually get a haircut. Well, we eventually started a band. And the motivation to start this band actually came from not really a fluke, but we decided we wanted to serenade one of our moms on their birthday, you know, mañanitas, which is a traditional thing to do early in the morning for the person whose birthday is. So we said, let's learn an old Mexican song. At this point, Mexican music was background music for us. Young kids, it was all about rock and roll. You know, as soon as we got tall enough to reach the knob on the radio, we changed the dial. Let's listen to rock and roll. So we found some old records and we put them on. By this point, we're already rock and rollers. And we attempted to learn one of the songs, and we were really, wow. We were kind of dumbfounded by how complicated the music was. And we thought there's five great guitar players in the entire world. You know, Jimi Hendrix, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton. But we were listening to this one guy play, And we said, wow, this guy's blowing them all away. So we were smitten. We dove right into the music. We wanted to learn more about it. Of course, the birthday serenade went pretty good. And we got so involved with it that we gave up our bands. And we decided to just do this full time, starting about 1973.
Let me ask you this, because this is a whole new style of music. You have to learn new instruments. What was that process like? And I'm also wondering if it felt different to play this music.
That is a good question. We started going to local record stores and picking up records just because we saw that, wow, look at this crazy instrument. We like this. We like, you know, so we literally, when we went looking for instruments, we'd go to pawn shops and we'd hold the record up and say, hey, there's one. We'd have the record in our hand. We'd be looking in the window of the pawn shop. And we were buying these instruments like vihuelas and jaranas for like 15, 20 bucks. We didn't have any idea how to tune them or how to play them. But we were fortunate enough to find some local musicians that knew how to play those instruments. And one of those was Candelario Delgado, who had a guitar shop in East LA called Candela's Guitars. And he made instruments and fixed instruments and did everything for all the local mariachis and other musicians. So he was instrumental in showing us how they're tuned and more or less how they're played. But we're pretty much on our own. And it sounded different. But you know, one thing we did do that was slightly different from the traditional was that we applied our own rock and roll sort of instincts and energy to it. And we gravitated toward jarocho music because it's kind of like the rock and roll of traditional music, meaning that it's really an intense music and we enjoyed playing that. But we were off and running. We were listening to music because all the music is different from region to region, instrumentation and vocal approach, everything's different. So we had a lot of stuff to learn.
I was just going to ask you that because it's new musical languages. And I'm just wondering when you began to really feel fluent in it.
Oh, it's endless. We'll listen to like an old record and we'll think, hey, man, we're almost there. And this is 45 years later. It's an intense, complicated music and it's always something to learn. But we got pretty good at it in a few years. And of course, that's all we did for 10, 11 years before we went back to rock and roll.
Yeah, exactly. And it was an interesting time. Well, throughout the country, but certainly in Los Angeles, because there was a growing Chicano movement.
That's right.
Greater sensibility of Chicano contributions to the culture, I think. Certainly, the Farm Workers Union finally was gaining some attention, led by Cesar Chavez. Were you a part of this movement or did it affect you in some way? I know you did an album for Chavez or contributed to one.
Yeah, we did that in 1975. At the very beginning, we were attracted by the music. The Chicano movement was already on the move. The interesting thing that happened with us was that we were concentrated on the music, but at the same time, people were coming to us because, I mean, this is unusual for young musicians to be playing music of our parents to begin with. So innately, that was a big statement for us as young people. But we got more involved as the whole cultural renaissance, as you mentioned, began to bloom in East Los Angeles and surrounding areas. So there was a politicizing of young Chicanos and Chicanas all over Los Angeles. And we became part of that. Our intention was to play, to expose Mexican music. And again, it turned out to be part of this renaissance of music, dance, art, Mexican culture in general.
I'm curious, just because I always am, we all have to support ourselves and pay the rent. How were you guys able to support yourself through your music during this time?
We were kids right out of high school when we started the band. So we were still getting, you know, three squares a day and living at mom's house. But as life gets complicated, you know, I got married in 1975 and the rest of the boys had girlfriends, eventually got married, children showed up. And yes, life got a little complicated. But at the time, there was still a burgeoning movement of Chicanos in higher education colleges, and they would have functions and they'd hire us. And there was all, you know, there's kind of money going around at that time to support culture. That all kind of disappeared, you know, when we kept the lights on. We'd supported each other. And then when things got really tough, we'd all pitch in and help out at each other. You know, there was always food on the table and a roof over our heads. So we managed to do okay. We got by.
Yeah.
But then as life got really complicated later on, we ended up playing in a Mexican restaurant. Like exactly what we didn't want to do is to play the typical music. We wanted to expose the rich heritage of and legacy of Mexican music that's throughout all the regions. But we had to do it. And we had to support that. At the same time, we were playing weddings. And we were. I always say, tell the story that if you got married between 1973 and 1980, we probably played your wedding. So we were busy. We're just trying to keep going. And then we eventually made our move across the LA River into Hollywood and attracted some attention. And we met a band called The Blasters, and we met a band called X, and The Blasters gave us the opportunity to open for them at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And it went over huge. People were talking, the papers are writing about where did this band come from, playing this revved up Tex-Mex music and old rock and roll. The rest is history.
And you got a record contract from that.
Yeah. Slash Records, Bob Biggs, who just recently passed away, rest his soul, came out to see the band. He liked what he heard, and he decided, well, let's make a record. But he wasn't altogether sure. So they put up just very little money for us to do an EP. And then we got a booking agent. At that point, we had been playing the Hollywood clubs for about a year and doing pretty well and getting a lot of attention. So we hit the road, and we, the first time ever that this band ever went touring around the United States. That was unusual. But from that little record, we won a Grammy. And so the record company said, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, when does a punk rock label, one of their bands win a Grammy?
I have a question, which is, you've played acoustically with very different instruments for over a decade. And then you went back to incorporating, you know, rock sounds, R&B, blues, as well as the traditional music in your work. And I'm just curious about if what you learned musically transferred when you began to play electric instruments again.
Well, there's a very particular sensibility from playing traditional Mexican music, playing from all these different acoustic instruments. But what really brought us back into rock and roll was that we had explored all these regions throughout Mexico. Again, all of these have different instruments and different styles, rhythms. The one that we hadn't got to yet was the border music that had developed around the Texas-Mexico border. And that was Tex-Mex, Norteño music to Mexicanos. That stuff was happening in northern Mexico. And so we decided to explore that. Now, when you think about a Tex-Mex band or a Norteño band, it's an electric bajo sexto, which plays kind of bass and rhythm at the same time, an accordion, a bass and percussion. That kind of sounds like a rock and roll band, doesn't it, Joe?
It sure does. Yeah.
So that kind of made us, pave the way for us to get back into a rock and roll. As a matter of fact, we started to incorporate rock and roll in our shows even before we made it to Hollywood. We were doing a kind of electric acoustic thing, and it was pretty good because, you know, we could play traditional music for the reception at a wedding, and then for the dance afterward we could be the rock and roll band. So we had the market cornered.
Yeah, you sure did.
That's what brought us back into that, and that's what we brought over across the river to the Los Angeles Hollywood clubs, is this stew of old rock and roll and revved up Tex-Mex with an accordion. Cuando te cases con el otro iré a tu boda. Cuando pregunten enseguida me opondré. Cuando pregunta el cura que por qué me opongo, yo le diré que porque tú eres mi querer. Y se enoja el que iba a ser tu esposo.
You know, when I think about Los Lobos, I always feel as though You guys are just immersed in this wide swath of music. You're so opened musically. You don't close musical doors. And I wonder if you could talk about the importance of that openness in music or in any creative enterprise.
Absolutely. Yeah. We brought in rock and roll along with the Tex-Mex music. Our background was originally rock and roll. We left that to explore traditional Mexican music. For us, it didn't seem like a difference between all this. This is, of course, during a time in the 70s and early 80s, and the punk movement was rebelling against putting things in compartments. That kind of was a rebellion. We were kind of rebelling before that by mixing everything up and listening to music from all over. We didn't just spend 10 years just listening to Mexican music. There was all this very cool music that was happening. That's when Marvin Gaye had revolutionized soul music with What's Going On. That was an incredible record. And a lot of things were going on at the moment. But it was important for us to bring this music. We built a cultural bridge across from East LA into Hollywood. So it was this thing that was really incredible. We'd show up at a carriada at a park, and they would see us with our long hair and beat up jeans and flannel shirts, and we'd start playing Mexican music. And it kind of confused them a little bit. When we played East LA College for the first time, playing traditional Mexican music, the kids didn't know what to make of it. They wasn't sure if they were supposed to clap or not, because isn't this music we're supposed to like leave behind and move forward, and this whole process of homogenization and that this country does so well? But no, we dug in, and people, and we opened up these doors. As you mentioned, we didn't close any. We just kept it open. And to this day, we still play music that is this mix of traditional music. No matter where we go, we never censor ourselves, whether it be Helsinki, Minneapolis, or Osaka. This is who we are.
When you were playing electric music in Hollywood, you always had songs that you sung in Spanish as well as in English.
That's correct. And as well as we played Ritchie Valens songs. We played La Bamba. We played Look, Come On, Let's Go. And that was a tribute to Ritchie Valens, who was the first one to become a Chicano rock star.
Well, in 1987, you've been together for 15 years, and you provided a lot of the music for the film La Bamba,
That's right.
the biopic about Ritchie Valens. And how did this come to be, Louis?
Can I preface this with something real short?
Please.
We made our first full-length record, Well, How Will It Survive? And at that point, we could have easily gone to this, taken the road to just being a good time party band, or we can take another road. And that's the one we chose to do. We took some responsibility of the attention we were getting. We wanted to write songs that express the things that we saw and the things that we learned and the stories that we were told. And that's where that started. And we had done really well with that first record. The next record was 1986. We went to the studio that was by the Light of the Moon, and at that point we were touring, and we're up in the United in up Northern California when we got a note from someone in the audience saying Ritchie Valens' mom is here. She'd like to meet you after the show, and we were just like, "What?
Whoa.
Okay." And so we're rubber legs up on stage, and afterwards we met her. We went to her house the next day, had the typical Chicano meal. We had Colonel Sanders' Southern Fried Chicken with rice and beans. And we sat there, and she was just a wonderful woman. And she told us, "They're making a movie on Richie's life. We would like you to do the music." We were honored by that. As a matter of fact, she was bringing out things like memorabilia and things that Richie stuff, and it was just incredible. We just didn't know it was unbelievable what was happening. So we said yes, yes, and yes. Yeah, of course we will. And it was an incredible opportunity to. We looked at it, so we're paying tribute to Ritchie Valens. We had no clue, really, no clue at all that record would do what it did.
So after 15 years, Los Lobos became the overnight success.
Yes. Yes. We were touring in Europe, and we came back to the United States, and this was a right beginning of summer, 1987, and we were jet lagged and tired, and everybody was patting us on our backs and congratulating us. I said, "What's going on?" He said, "You got the number one record in the country." And we said, "Wow, that's great. Can't we take a nap first? It was amazing that record just went through the roof. The movie did well, and suddenly Los Lobos were on the map.
And the song La Bamba was one, of course, that you knew well because it's a very traditional song. And if I have my facts right, it's a wedding song.
Yeah. It's a traditional song that goes back for 200 years, played at weddings. We had played it the traditional way for a long time. We played in the rock and roll way when we started electrifying again after 10 years. But what we did for the single, the one that became the huge hit, and so we did something really interesting. At the very end of the song, we did a coda that was us playing it in the traditional way. So as you hear the song fade, the rock and roll version, you hear the traditional jarocho version of La Bamba. So we had to do that. We had to kind of make sure that we gave a nod to the traditional music.
Which is so beautiful. I love La Bamba in all its iterations. It's one of those songs. It's a great song. It makes you smile.
Yeah, it does. It does. And there's a lot of smiles all over the world. And it was incredible. It went, I think, double platinum, triple platinum. I don't know whatever it is,
yeah.
But it was huge. And then we started touring on a larger scale. That was the first tour we did was opening for U2 on the Joshua Tree, which was a gigantic record for them.
Well, you, following the success of La Bamba, chose to do an acoustic album of Mexican folk music, which was
right.
A very bold move. And I would love to know your thinking. It's a great album and very unexpected.
That's right. I don't know if I want to go as far as to say that we were experiencing a little bit of identity crisis. Maybe, I think so, a little bit. After this huge, huge hit eclipsed everything we had done prior to that. No resentment, no hard feelings, but it was something we were aware of. And we just felt that we'd wanted to get back on track again. The obvious thing for us to do is La Bamba number two, but we weren't going to do that. So instead we decided, well, let's take the attention we're getting and focus it on traditional music, on the culture, on exposing that. This was our mission to begin with. So we went over to Warner Brothers Records. And we had an appointment with Lenny Warnker, president of the company. And we sat there and we gave him a cassette. Check this out. It was us playing traditional music, but no one had heard at that point. He put it on and he says, "Wow, this is incredible music. This is you?" He said, "Yep, that's us. We'd like for this to be our next record."
Pobrecita guacamaya, ay, qué lástima me das. Qué lástima me das, pobrecita guacamaya.
Se acabaron las petallas, ahora sí que comerás.
And he looked at us, eyes got kind of wide. And this is back when record people were record people. They were people that were involved in music. It's just artist driven back then. And he was one of those. So he was an artist guy. So he looked at us and he said, "You really want to make this record?" I said, "We do." And he said, "Okay, go and make your record. Let me figure out the rest." What he meant, Joe, by figuring out the rest, that he was going to walk over to the connecting door that his office with the chairman of the board, Mo Austin, walk in there and explain to him that Los Lobos were going to commit commercial suicide. And I'll tell you, I have to give him so much credit for allowing us to do that because it was a bold move. People wrote about it everywhere wondering what's going on here. No one had heard this music before, but it did well. People loved the record. To this day, it's still one of the favorites. It tickled us because it was people going to be listening to Son Jaroncho and Wapangos in Kyoto and in Europe and Helsinki, Finland. And it was so incredible that we were able to expose the music that way. And we won a Grammy for that one.
So there you go. There's a lesson.
Yeah.
You and David have been writing music together for over 40 years. And I'm curious how the process of songwriting has changed over the years.
Well, when we first got together and we were kids, you know, we started writing songs when we were just out of high school. And it was just frivolous kind of songs, you know, just fun songs, but whatever. And we left that to explore Mexican music for many years. And when we made our way back to rock and roll, we felt, well, obviously it was time to write songs again. So that's when, about that same time, like you said, I told you, we kind of went a different direction, and we wrote a song called A Matter of Time, which is a mm-hmm. song about a Mexican immigrant crossing the border, leaving his family behind. It's a conversation he has with his wife as he's leaving. That's the thing that became real important for us as songwriters, to experience and write it in a way that was more universal, that people could, anywhere in the United States, could find something they could relate to in it. The hardships and next, the joys, the disillusionments, the triumphs, all of that stuff, it's all mixed up into the music. It's always very, very hopeful. But we wanted to write songs that were about the things that we knew about. Again, like I mentioned to you before, about who we are and the stories that were told to us and the things that we saw growing up. We're the sons of Mexican immigrants. So we knew that we had to pay tribute to the legacy of our fathers and mothers.
You know, you're a painter as well as a musician, and I'm wondering, do you see your songs as you write them? Is it a visual thing for you?
Oh, yeah. I see the characters mm-hmm. walking across the room. I see their faces. I see what they're doing. It's the visual thing is very, very strong. It informs what I do. The way I put it is that David Hidalgo, you know, he's my songwriting partner. He thinks like a painter, and I'm a painter who thinks he's a musician.
And that's why it works so well.
It works good.
It does work good. East LA, it's a part of you. You're a part of it. How do you see that manifesting itself in the music itself?
We're carrying on. And as far as rock and roll goes, it's a tradition that started in the late 50s and early 60s with what eventually became known as the East LA sound. We're talking about bands from the early 60s like the Midnighters and Cannibal and the Headhunters and the Premiers. All these bands, that what they were doing is that they were taking Black R&B and through their own filters, Chicano filters, creating without even knowing. I think it's just a natural progression to create a new sound of R&B that was very identifiably Chicano. And so we took Mexican music, and then we took, you know, rock and roll. Then we started writing original songs, and all of this really started to really reflect, you know, where we came from. You might not think about it, but it's no question about it that in the summer of 1987, there was a little band from East LA that had a number one record of a traditional Mexican song, and the name of the band was Los Lobos. That's quite a statement and a quite an overview of what we had been doing in so many years. Another snapshot of Chicano culture as it moves forward.
Well, I have to just give a shout out to Kiko, which is such a masterpiece that really just tells the story. And you did it again in The Town and the City. That album just takes you through a story that's astounding.
Those are my favorite records. Kiko is absolutely my favorite record. We have done La Bamba. We did La Pistola del Corazon collection of traditional Mexican music. After that, we did a big kind of rock and roll record with The Neighborhood. And we all found ourselves, well, we've had all this success. Now, what do we do with it? And we went to the studio and we threw Care to the Wind. We just said, let's just make a record. Let's just make some art. And this record at that point took a life of its own. It started to make itself. We gave it a name. We named it Kiko, like it was a living thing, which it was. It was a record. I just sat back and watched it kind of make itself. It's a wonderful thing when that happens when you're a writer. It confused the heck out of everybody, I'll tell you. If I hadn't heard anything like that. And coming from us, I think part of what we do, we've been doing things that people don't expect to hear. This is a record nobody would expect from a Chicano band from East LA. So we're always doing something that was a little bit different. And not for the sake of it. It was just something that we got the call. And when we just responded to that calling.
And your latest album, Native Sons, mm-hmm. all covers but the title song. And it's all covers of California musicians.
That's right. Yeah. We had this idea of doing a covers record. So we said, let's talk about Southern California. Let's talk about LA. And it was great because it was a tribute to where we're from, the Beach Boys and Jackson Browne from Highland Park, you know, and of course, War, the Midnighters, of course, some of the wonderful Black R&B. It made it a lot easier. But at one point we just said, like, wow, we got to quit. We've got like 15 songs here. So then I had this idea and I talked to David about it. So why don't we write an original song? And of course, in his classic humor, looks at me and says, you want to write a cover? And I said, no, let's write a song that puts a bow on it, holds it all together. A song that's a tribute to LA. He goes, yeah, it sounds good. So I sat down and figured, okay, wow. What do I do? And then I just decided this could be like the returning son, like the prodigal son coming back after leaving and coming back to LA and asking for Los Angeles to open its arms and welcome him back. So that's what it was about. And it kind of tells about, in a way, it tells about us, you know, that we've been everywhere in the world, but still East Los Angeles will always be our home.
And if you had to think of a through line for Los Lobos as it's approaching its half century mark, what do you think that through line would be?
I can hear the music of Jeopardy playing in the background. Wow. I would say that not in a complete sense. I think there's community, there's family, there's love, there's tradition, there's culture. And suddenly I'm listing everything that this country stands for and the thing that we need to preserve, you know, everything that we believe in. And I think that's the through line. This band has always done what they believed in and nothing less.
Qué bonito suena esta cumbia cumbia. Los vatos le gusta. Para chicos cumbia. Qué bonito suena. Esta cumbia, cumbia, los vatos le gustan, pa' la chicos cumbia.
It's funny, Joe, because, you know, there's so much of it we do is tradition, and that is all history, and that's all about looking where we've been, but just keeping moving forward. The purest definition of tradition is to do something that maintains the tradition, but moving forward, making something new, and that's what we've done.
Right. Not like an ethnomusicologist, but as an artist looking at something that's traditional and bringing it into the present.
Yeah, we've done that. Every move we made from the very beginning was slightly against the grain, but we were better for it. And I hope that people we've inspired, hopefully, that they're better for it, too. We're at a point now where before we thought ourselves as the accidental rock stars. Because we never really planned on any of this. We did it because we believed in the music, and the music itself was enough for us to sustain us. Every time we get an accolade like this one or a Grammy or anything else, we always, in a way, and this is not through mock humility. I mean, in a way, we're still looking over our shoulders, wondering who they're talking about. But I think it's time now for us to feel comfortable with was saying that we are artists and we have done this for a long time and that our story has validity and that people now, I think, need to hear our story, because if there's anything we can leave behind is what we've done. Just when you think of anybody from Patsy Cline to Miguel Aces Mejia, they left behind this musical legacy that everybody can enrich our lives. And I hope that we can do that too.
I think it's a safe bet to say you have. Louis, thank you. I mean, thank you for your time today, but thank you for music that has filled my life.
Joe, thank you very much. And thank you for all the really insightful questions. And I appreciate it. And of course, thank you to everybody, the committee and everybody who has bestowed this honor on us as being any fellows. And of course, we didn't do it alone. We did along with everybody who inspired us, from our mothers and fathers to the musicians to East LA, which still is a rich community and has wonderful, incredible music coming out of it. So I'd like to thank everybody and yourself, Joe, too, for spending time with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Louis. That was songwriter, guitarist, percussionist, jarana player, and co-founder of Los Lobos, Louis Perez. Los Lobos is a 2021 National Heritage Fellow. And in case you missed it, the 2022 National Heritage Fellows have recently been announced. They include bluegrass fiddler Michael Cleveland from Charlestown, Indiana, the Excelsior Band from Mobile, Alabama, and the legendary Ingram Metz from Richmond, Virginia. You can find a full list of the fellows at arts.gov, and we'll also have them listed in our show notes. You've been listening to Artworks, produced at the National Endowment for the Arts. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating on Apple. It helps people to find us. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Josephine Reed. Thanks for listening.